Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. And to start the show today, we're talking about the book, Saving the Art of Medicine, subtitled Observations of a Practitioner. And the author with us today, Dr. Alan Sussman. Our guest is in private practice, a board-certified endocrinologist and a clinical assistant professor at the University of Washington. He's got a really interesting book. When you visit your doctor, how well do you feel understood? Tell us what you do when you maybe don't agree with your doctor. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Alan Sussman, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm looking forward to this, Larry.
So why did you decide that this is the time for you to share your story and write a book?
Okay, well, I am retired. This is a legacy book. I've had a very varied career, and I am very passionate about what I wrote. While I was very involved in science, I realized ultimately the best part of medicine is the non-science part, the art. And that's what leads more to healing than the science part. And I want to make that clear.
You know, you just, maybe it would help to describe your evolution as a physician. You wrote that you went from bookish to mindful to heartfelt.
Right. Yes. It's been a long journey and a very meaningful one. Bookish is where all medical students start. Information, more information that they have to learn throughout the years. Their relationship with patients is very minimal at that point in time. Then when I went into practice, I felt like I knew a lot, but in many ways I knew very little. I did not know about patients. I did not understand relationship and how important that was. As I started seeing patients over a long period of time, I developed a bond with a lot of them. This can sometimes be looked as negative, saying, oh, wait a minute, I became friends with some of my patients. and people say, no, you shouldn't be a friend. At the best, you should be as a neighbor. You should just be able to talk with someone, but you can't be intimately involved with them. But in medicine, and one of the things I'm very grateful for having in medicine, is it gave me a chance to become very intimate with patients in terms of what's going on in their life. They were sharing with me extraordinary difficult issues, sensitive issues, and I needed to be there and to listen to them. And I would learn from their experience, and hopefully by my listening and trying to give some advice that would help them. And that was an extraordinary part of my journey. Then I became heartfelt because I had a severe injury to my right hand. I was always a very avid tennis player, played the piano, and the right hand got damaged severely, which then meant a long period of time I could not do any of that. And what I ended up doing was going into meditation work. And through meditation, and particularly my type of meditation is Buddhist, I developed a real sense of heartfeltness, which involves compassion, loving kindness, equanimity.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about and the stories you tell in your book, I mean, you make so many great examples in your book based on your own experiences over a long career. It really makes for interesting reading just from that perspective alone. But those experiences, I think, bring forth the thought that you have about being a good physician. And Western medicine, it's kind of organized so that a different doctor looks at every part of your body. You know, you've got an eye doctor, you've got all sorts of doctors. And we can miss a lot by not treating the human body as a whole.
Absolutely. That's one of the important messages, is looking at it as a whole. And as you said, you can miss a lot that way. And in my book, I go through this classic example from psychology of several different basketball players that are tossing around a basketball, and the psychologists have a group of people come in and say, we want you to count how many times the basketball is counted, and we're going to see who can really do a good job with this. And so they become very attentive, and you're doing that, and there's three different balls going on. It's a three-ring circus at the time. And right in the middle is a person in a gorilla suit walking right through the middle of the whole process. And only 50% of the people saw the gorilla.
So they're not, and that could be true with physicians who are, let's say, zeroed in on one aspect of a person's body. They can miss sometimes what might even be considered, why didn't they see that?
Yes, yes, yes. There is a wonderful quote from Einstein that says, it is the theory that determines what we observe.
And you noted somewhere in the book, I think it was early in the book, that misdiagnoses lead to more legal suits than procedural errors.
Yes. Yes, I know. My malpractice was as high as that of the cardiologists who were doing all sorts of procedures.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Nick in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Hi, you were talking about like getting a relationship with your doctor.
Yeah.
There's a guy in Peshtigo, Wisconsin. I actually followed him from Green Bay to Peshtigo because I liked him so much. He swore more than I did. And if he said that it was BS, and he told me if I thought he was being a butthole, and that's not the word to use, just to let him know. And he's just an amazing doctor. I mean, he's super religious, which is kind of funny when he swears so much. But like I said, after finding Dr. Scott, I won't go to anybody else.
Oh, man. Comment on that, Dr. Yeah. Sussman.
Yes. Well, I think one of the principles there that he's using is he's using humility. He's not just trying to tell someone what to do. He's trying to be in relationship with you, and you're working together with it. And he'll talk about it in any way that seems appropriate between you and him. And if the two of you can connect, that's a win-win situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. You spend some time talking about evidence-based medicine, and you write, there's no science without interpretation or bias. And there are biases built into clinical studies.
Yes, yes. Well, the most obvious bias that's built into clinical studies is a lot of them are from pharmacology institutions. And they're trying to promote the drug that they have. They're looking for what makes their drug important or slightly different, which means that they're rolling the dice in a way to show that. And so it's not always a very balanced point of view of what's going on. Then there's just the basic problem that everyone likes to only hear good news. Positive results. And when you look at the literature, you will find the preponderance of information is what is going on positively, not that it isn't true. That doesn't make as much news.
I thought it was interesting in your talking about randomized clinical trials that they are oftentimes, in order to be to arrive at a positive solution, let's say, they need to be very strictly run and with a very, sometimes a very specific audience or group of people in the study, so that when it's over, they may get credit for having done a very tight study, but in the end, it may not apply to the general population.
Absolutely. There's a fantastic acronym that came out in terms of the limitations that's involved with the participants that come in studies. And the acronym is WEIRD, W-E-I-R-D, Western Educated Industrialized Rich Democratic, is the vast majority of the participants in studies. So one could say is, yes, studies are definitely weird, trying to make them less weird. And you're absolutely right in terms of the sense of what I call rigidity, but rigorousness. So it could be very rigorous in terms of that. The information that you're getting is very applicable to that one group. But then, as you're saying, that can really limit its general applicability to just a small group of people. And it's the physician that has to use that information with the doctor, with the patient, in order to decide how relevant it is for them.
It's, and I think that the there may be a tendency in some instances to just take that finding and apply it in a general sense.
Yes, which is a very common problem that can happen. It's much easier to try to lump things than to separate them. And when you're just talking about the individual, it's a challenge. It's very there is not as much answers. A study gives an answer, but an individual needs the care. Or as 100 years ago, when you talk about how you should take care of patients, Dr. Peabody said, the secret of the care of the patient is the caring of the patient. So the caring is the important part. The information is relative. Just one other thought with that was when I was involved in a lot of clinical trials, and when I would talk about such areas as increased cholesterol and whether they should be on medication or not, and this is what the information shows, and you go through A, B, C, D, and after about the third one, I'm looking at the patient, and the patient's eyes are starting to cross. And I say, aha, all right, okay, I got very good news for you. Almost everything I'm saying is not going to be true or going to be changed in the next 5 years. The only thing that's going to be maintained, hopefully, is our relationship.
just as in passing, you mentioned cholesterol, and you do say, I think it was, I don't remember the chapter, but you said we should lose the label of good cholesterol for HDL.
Yes, I know. There were actually specific agents that were developed that were phenomenal in raising HDL levels. And so everyone said, here, this is going to be a real boom. So one part is, yes, it raised the HDL level very high. The expectations is more good is better. And there was an increased amount of heart attacks in that group.
Our guest today, Dr. Alan Sussman, his book is titled Saving the Art of Medicine, Observations of a Practitioner. Questions for him? Talk about your relationship with your doctor, or maybe how our healthcare system might be improved. I know we want to get into that with him as well. Number to call, 800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the book, Saving the Art of Medicine, Observations of a Practitioner, the author, Dr. Alan Sussman. Great to have him with us today. Questions or comments for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. What do you think about the healthcare system that we've got now? How does it work for you? Love to hear from you. Give us a call. How can doctors balance patient connection with a hospital's goal, which is to be a profitable organization?
Yes, that is the $64,000 question, isn't it? Right. And I don't know if I can give you a five word answer to that. That is an extremely important part. And the only way that I can look at it is that you have to separate it. The institutions are very big, and they can't be moved quickly. They do try to look at healthcare also from a subjective point of view, but the bottom line is they're a business. And doctors are trying to take care of patients. And to take care of patients, they have to be have relationship with the patient. I think the problem is the relationship and how good that is, just as the one caller had suggested, that can't be quantified. So the system has no way of really saying, oh, that we are doing a good job because of this patient. They're doing a good job because they might see the patient within X period of time, get the results back in X period of time. They had to look at ways to quantify it. And what the doctor has to do is, number one, have a well-balanced life themselves so that they can take care of themselves as well as the patients. And in that way, hopefully, they won't be impacted by as much of what's going on with the institution, which is really involved in some contrary moves to what they need to be doing. So they have to become clear what it is. For me, meditation was a very important part of that.
I was thinking about my own doctor who I've had been associated with, Jim Sussman, my GP, for 25 years. We know each other very well. He knows me very well because we've had a chance to talk about a lot of things over the years. And he knows what I like and what I do and what I don't do. But it always seems to me that he always has to do a fair amount of typing into the computer as well. There's the various things that have to be clicked off and written in. And he's often commented that it's a time consuming process.
Absolutely. It's the bane of a doctor's existence, or as I would say is, in the exam room, it's a threesome. It's the doctor, computer, and patient. And what I want to have happen is more relationship of the doctor with the patient directly. And so for when electronic medical records came about, it was a very important advancement in terms of trying to end up with common platforms of how information can be passed on. Unfortunately, it didn't occur that way. It occurred more as a financial means of documenting how to increase how much a visit is worth. So now with this new AI, I've gotten very interested in it because I think it has a really important silver lining to it. And the silver lining is that the AI, and there are some problems with it, such as hallucinations, but the AI can end up can be very good at being a transcriptionist. It can transcribe exactly what's going on with the visit in great detail and very accurately, probably more accurately than a transcriptionist can. And it can also then put the information in a format that then can be used for other purposes, such as getting acceptance to do different procedures from the insurance company. It's something that would be very movable around in the system and would be very good. But the number one thing is it can not only transcribe it, but it can also put it in a format that's very readable and maybe even highlight words that the doctor would normally want to have highlighted as well. So it makes it easier to read and to utilize. So it can be a very important change. But yes, we got to get control of AI and of electronic medical records, rather than and have the people be in charge of it, not the machine.
Carolyn in Eau Claire has a comment for us. Carolyn, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I love your show. I could not agree with Dr. Sussman more. I have finally found my doctor. I'm in my 70s. I have multiple psychological and mental health issues, and I used to fight her. I just fought her all the time. And now I realize she looks at me, she knows me, and she looks at me and she says, I care about you. And it has made a sea change of difference. Now we work in tandem. I might have questions, and she answers them, and we usually agree. She's awesome.
Oh, Carolyn, thank you so much for calling. Comment, Dr. Sussman?
Yes. Well, that is a good physician. And again, that's something that took time for it to occur, and you found the right doctor for you. I know sometimes I've heard people talk about saying, "Is my physician doesn't really listen to me, and what should I do?" And my answer is, find another doctor. Find one that will listen to you. That's very important. Find one that you can relate to. Because at the end of the day, we're all people, and you want to find other people who, as you're saying, you feel symbiotic with this person that you can relate to and can relate to you. That doesn't happen with everyone. So when you have that, that's really important, and that's a very important part of the medical encounter and success.
Yeah. You write about a young woman in a wheelchair with multiple issues, and she was a marvelous person in your mind. She made it vividly clear the distinction between a person and her, between her as a person and her disease.
Yes.
And listening and caring were foremost in your mind with working with her and other patients.
Absolutely. This was a young woman who had a progressive neurologic disorder and was wheelchair bound, but had an absolutely infectious smile, even though she was completely wheelchair bound and had very limited motion with almost any of her extremities. But she would come in and would just always be smiling and was almost trying to make me feel comfortable rather than her at the time. but we just had a very good relationship. And one of the reasons I put her in the book was that on the upper part of her chest, she also had a tattoo of a small heart. And it just fit in so well as one of those yeah. heartfelt conditions, heartfelt yeah. feelings.
Barry in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Morning.
From what I hear, and I've had the experience, obviously, doctors are expected to see about a patient like every 20 minutes. Now, from what I understand, there's been some assistance provided with people like physician's assistants and nurse practitioners, but yet the system just seems to be so damn overloaded. Are there any other resources coming down the pike that the doctor sees that will provide more opportunity for doctors and nurse practitioners, et cetera, to spend more time with their with their patients? And I'd also like a comment. I just read the other day that 18% of our gross domestic product, 18% is spent on our medical system in this country. And when you compare that to many foreign countries that have national health insurance, we just seem to be so damn expensive that, and yet questionable quality. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So, additional resources to free up docs, or what's there? Yeah. Barry's wondering.
Right. I went through that whole process in myself throughout the years of practice I had, in terms of being told that I should only spend 7 minutes with the patient. And I just rebelled and said, if they ask me to spend seven, I'm going to spend 2 to 3 times that. I couldn't bear to do that. Even though economically it would make sense, it doesn't make sense in terms of taking care of patients. What I did learn over time is that with the relationship that you can develop with patients, if you're going to be seeing them long term, it's what's more important than quantity is quality. So it's the quality of the time that you have with the patient that's important. It's your sense as a physician of being very connected and centered, so that you can listen, truly listen to the patient. That's important. And I think if you do that, you can very often accomplish what you need to do, not perfectly, but much better, by just trying to follow precepts like that. And that you don't have to say, all right, I know I need to spend 3 times as much time. Even though I must admit, I've had patients where I would spend an inordinate amount of time because they really needed it. The good thing is I had a great group of patients over time that learned that if I spent more time with one patient, so they were seen later, they knew that they always would have that opportunity when and if they needed it. So it almost had to be like a community of everyone getting together to understand how to make it work. I don't know if there's any specific tool that's going to do that.
Hmm. Ryan in Sun Prairie, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, yes. I recently read a book, Why We Get Sick, on insulin resistance and how that's a driver of metabolic disease along with a lot of other chronic health issues. So I'm wondering if he's aware of that, or if doctors are generally aware of that, and if we can make a lot of progress in that area, if we could see improvement in standards of care. Thanks.
Right. I was an endocrinologist, and so I was very involved with insulin resistance, or what's called the metabolic syndrome, that's been around for almost 50 years now. And so that's been looked at very extensively and is a very important factor in healthcare. It is, quite frankly, a very complicated issue. And the one problem that happens when anyone tries to write about it, it's so complicated that they're always simplifying it in order to try to make some points. It's a little bit like that gorilla suit that I sort of mentioned before. They have to focus in a certain area. So it's an important part. Insulin and insulin resistance is a very important part of healthcare and how to decrease insulin resistance. There are medications out that do that. Quite frankly, the best way we know of improving that situation of increased insulin in the body when in the metabolic syndrome is things that the patient can do, which is eating right and exercise and being happy and less stress are all the basic tenets that one needs to follow for that. And so if you're doing all that, you're a long way along the way of where you need to go. And just a final point with that is sometimes when you start reading about these different books about what will help you is that you can start feeling bad about yourself, saying, well, I'm not doing a good enough job. And you start stressing about it, such as with diet. Oh, I'm not doing as well with the diet as I should. I got to keep on doing better. Well, if you stress enough about it, you can cause a problem. So you have to keep everything balanced and try to be balanced in your life, diet, and exercise.
I remember one story that you tell in your book about talking to a guy about taking up photography again. You'd learned that he was at one point had enjoyed that. Tell that story.
Yes. Yeah. No, he was a very, very, very successful aeronautical engineer. Very smart guy. And I was seeing him for his cholesterol level, and that was taken care of, but he was never satisfied with life. He was always had this pall of being depressed that was going on with him. And my intuitive sense was he's making himself less healthy by not trying to find areas that would make him less depressed. And then one time he just mentioned a couple of times he would mention to me how he liked photography. And I said, oh, well, why don't you bring in some of your photographs? And he brought in some of them. And I said, you should be going around the world doing this. These photographs are great. And he took it to heart, and then he changed. He still was working, but he spent a lot of time going around, particularly the United States, taking incredible photographs and actually winning regional, if not national, competitions with photography. He became happier.
He became a lot happier. Well, Matt in Madison emailed. He says, with few exceptions, he's had doctors and nurses complain the system is broken. There's nothing they can do. In his experience, doctors and nurses are the only ones with the power to fix the system. It's not going to be patients. They have enough problems. Insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies aren't going to change the status quo. That leaves doctors and nurses, unfortunately.
Oops. You got to have very broad shoulders for that one. I would just change that a little bit, is that the institution itself has its own prerogatives and are very difficult to change in tremendous ways. But what is really important is the patient and the doctor. That's what medicine was all about. Before the 20th century, that was probably the most important part, the relationship that was there. And that is a two-way street. So it's a question of the patient as well to find the right doctor that they can relate to. And quite frankly, we need to have mutual compassion. The doctor has to have compassion for the patient and the patient's problem. And it's good if the patient can have some compassion for the doctor who is trying to help them. That they're working together as two human beings is the most important part of what it is.
Yeah. I believe you. I believe what you wrote about in your book. So the doctor, well, let's put it this way. So if you have a doctor that you're not happy with as a patient, I think your suggestion is find another doctor.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't always sort of feel that if that relationship's not working, that one has to say that that is a doctor that shouldn't be practicing. It's two individuals that don't work well together. I wouldn't say that in my practice it was 100% of patients and I that had enough in common that it worked well. When it worked well, it was fantastic. And there are times what the patient expected and what I felt I can give were not on the same page. Well, that's just two people talking. Doctors don't always have the right answers. They're just giving opinions and they have to just work together with the patient. So find someone you can work with.
And on that note, we are out of time. And boy, there's so much in your book that we haven't covered here today, Dr. Sussman. I'm hoping a lot of people get a chance to read your book, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
I really enjoyed it, enjoyed the questions that came up, and yes, and I'm more than happy to, if you read the book, there are ways of getting in touch with me too. I'm happy to talk with anyone.
The book is titled Saving the Art of Medicine and the subtitle Observations of a Practitioner. The author, Dr. Alan Sussman, our guest today. And I much enjoyed reading the book, and I think you will as well. We are going to turn our attention to food. And certainly food had played a role in that Dr. Sussman's book. But we've got, you know, the season for family and food coming up starting next week, as a matter of fact, or the week after. Thanksgiving's coming pretty soon. Beth Olson, our guest today, coming up next to talk about the family, festivity, and food. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.